Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Debbie Guy Geesh, and that was AC/DC Back in Black. And no, this is not a rock radio station. You have tuned into the Demand Generation Essential Series. I just personally like to start with that song because it always gets me revved up. And it also reminds me of the whole purpose of this Demand Generation Series, and that's to make you a Demand Generation marketing rock star. So the Demand Generation Series is essentially a 12-week series, and we're bringing to you interviews with demand generation practitioners. So unlike a lot of things that you may attend where you've got people telling you what you should be doing, this instead is a series of interviews with practitioners and marketers just like you who are going to be sharing with you exactly how they did it. And in my mind, that's a big difference. Today's show is number 6 of 12. And today's guests are Jim Kaner and Heather Bennett of M5. And in a few minutes, this incredibly dynamic team, and to say that I'm tickled to have them on the show is an absolute understatement, they are going to be sharing with us a couple of things. Number one, how they got up and running with marketing automation. And I've rarely seen a company intake marketing automation and get to the level of sophistication that they've achieved so quickly. They're also going to be sharing with us how they have implemented, are you ready for this, 16 different lead nurturing programs. And thirdly, and most importantly, they're going to be sharing with us metrics, and more metrics across both marketing and sales from the results of these programs. So this is a must-listen-to interview. But let's do some housekeeping first. Everyone, you guys are tuned in to Blog Talk Radio. And Blog Talk Radio is free. It streams live over the internet. So as I'm sitting here looking at my switchboard, it is jam-packed with people who have called in. So Blog Talk Radio works a little bit differently from a webinar. So number one, if you have dialed in on the phone to listen to the radio show, you need to hang up and do one of two things. Either go to the link that we sent to you in the email that'll take you to my Blog Talk Radio page, and you just click play because my show is live right now. Or you can go to Blog Talk Radio if you don't have a link, and you can search on No Good Lead Left Behind. And again, my show will pop up, click play, and then the show will stream live through your computer over the internet, so no telephone required. So again, everyone that has dialed in, you need to hang up and access this streaming live over the internet. Because toward the end of the show, we will give everyone a call-in number so that if you want to talk live to Jim and Heather about how they have achieved so much success, you'll be able to ask them live questions on the air. So that's the first way that you want to experience Blog Talk Radio. This is an experiment in social media, not the typical kind of things that we marketers do. But I really feel like for education, which is really what this is all about for demand generation marketers, I wanted to keep it casual, I wanted to keep it fun, and I thought Blog Talk Radio was a good way to do that. Now, there's a couple of other ways that you can take advantage of this learning experience from today. We do have a chat room, and you can see, you can press chat. If you have not registered for Blog Talk Radio, if you want to go into the chat room, you will need to register. That takes about 90 seconds to do. But we typically have some pretty active conversations in the chat room. We also get a lot of questions from the chat room as well. Today's chat room moderator is Majda, so she'll be in there, and she'll be able to make sure that any question that you have while we're interviewing Jim and Heather, if you're in the chat room and you just want to put your question in the chat, we'll make sure that we get that. In addition to that, when you listen to today's radio interview with Jim and Heather, again, this is going to be a very, very good learning experience if you're into demand generation as a marketer. But there are additional ways that you can also extend your education into demand generation. So number one, if you have not yet registered for the series, if you register for the series, not only do you get the recorded podcast, and you can also download it in iTunes, But we also send out the Q&A from the interview today, as well as a unique asset every week that's typically some kind of tool that is related to the topic. And we've actually put together a whole toolkit, so every series, every interview that we do in the series, you can get the interview, and you can also get the key assets, and you can also get the Q&A. Again, that's just another great way to extend your education. And then finally, if you haven't registered, you can go to our webpage, which is www.pedowitz, that's PEDOWITZ group.com, and where you can register on the left-hand side, and then not only can you hear these great interviews, but you'll have access to all these additional learning assets as well. Okay, all right. Now we're done with housekeeping. Everybody knows Blog Talk Radio streams over the Internet. You know how to register to get the additional learning assets. Let me introduce our guest to you today. And again, it is with great pleasure. Number one, this is the first time in the series that we've actually had a sales and marketing team duo. And I think the combination for demand generation is so powerful. And I think part of the power of the story that you're going to hear today, especially with the results, is because there is this incredible alignment between sales and marketing. So let me introduce you to Jim Kaner, who is the Chief Revenue Officer of M5. And Jim oversees all facets of worldwide sales and marketing. He's a veteran. I won't say how old he is, but he's a veteran executive in the high-tech arena with recent management success in enterprise and SaaS software for the automotive, aerospace, and defense manufacturing arenas. And again, one of the things I really like about Jim's background is that it covers a lot of verticals. And Jim has been at this marketing automation demand generation game for a while, and he's used it consistently in all of those verticals. Prior to joining M5 in 2009, Jim founded BX Global Partners and served as a managing partner. Previously, he served as president and CEO of Cohesia Corporation, where he led negotiations culminating in Cohesia's acquisition by Indianapolis-based product lifecycle manufacturing specialist. He then served as president and COO for PowerWay, which is the same company, where his primary focus was on acquisition integration, global company growth, and new initiatives in U.S., Asia, and Europe. In earlier roles, Jim has just served in global sales and marketing executive positions, which again, I think makes him such a rock star in this arena. Jim, welcome to the show.
Debbie, it's great to be here.
I've got to tell you guys, this is going to be such an exciting interview. Let me introduce the second part to the powerful dynamic team at M5, and that's Heather Bennett, who is Vice President of Marketing. Currently, she oversees marketing and also inside sales at M5, which to me is a very interesting structure for a demand generation team. She relies on her extensive sales background to help M5 grow revenue by developing successful and repeatable sales processes and marketing initiatives. Again, a lot of times what we're seeing with demand generation marketers, those that have a better understanding of sales are doing some of the most incredible things that make the biggest impact on revenue. But prior to coming to M5, Heather earned her reputation as a top producer in the technology industry primarily, helping companies build out web and disaster recovery architecture for interactive futures in the New York and Cambridge computer area. She then called on that experience and her passion for developing people, and she helped executives and their sales teams improve effectiveness through her consulting startup, Heather Bennett Resources. She brought her innovative approach to clients in many industries, including technology, insurance, manufacturing, retail distribution, agriculture, and healthcare. Heather, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Debbie. Great to be here.
I have to tell you guys, I've known Jim for a while, and I've known Heather for a while. What I did not know until I asked him to be on the show was just the incredible things that they were doing as a team at M5 with marketing automation and specifically in lead generation. We understand a little bit about your role. I'd like to start with a little bit different question, Jim and Heather. And Jim, let me ask you this question. You guys, and again, we're going to tell the full story of what you guys are doing right now. Why don't we start with Jim? I'd like to hear from you personally around when and why did you begin the marketing automation demand generation journey? Because unlike a lot of marketers out there, this is actually the second time you have implemented these kinds of processes. So tell me a little bit about that journey.
Well, it's a very interesting journey, and it started way back in 2006. And I have to give you some credit for this because you were really the catalyst that started me really into the digital body language marketing arena. Prior to that, I'd done a bunch of regular style marketing websites, things like that, and we had some lumpy campaigns where we sent three-dimensional mailers and stuff like that. But in 2006, I ran into you down at Knowledgent, and I was just fascinated with all the wonderful things that you had been doing with Eloqua, and that really just really kind of started my mind thinking about what was possible and what is this new digital landscape and how can I use it and leverage it going forward. And so pretty much that was the catalyst that started me going, and then over the years just continuing to delve into the processes and technology that was available, and as time went on, learned more and more, and then after this is the third company for deployment of this style technology for me, and it's each one's gotten better. It's just been a great learning experience and just a wonderful journey to go on. And I have to thank you for that catalyst kickoff.
That was not a planned question. I just want everybody to know that. But again, Jim is such a practitioner. He's done it three times. Maybe Jim and Heather, you guys can tell me specifically what was going on at M5 that made you think that marketing automation, which is the thing that enables lead nurturing, was something that you guys needed to undertake.
Yeah, so what we had going on, excuse me, here on M5 is we had an unbelievable sales team who was really good at getting customers from once they've showed their interest in a phone system to getting them closed. But as we grew and as our market grew, we found that our sales team was getting stretched a little bit too thin as far as doing their own prospecting, taking the leads that marketing was generating and getting appointments, following them through to the close. Anyone who's done any kind of prospecting knows when you get a lead, sometimes you have to call it two times and sometimes you got to call it 20 times in order to get that first appointment. And our sales reps were doing all of that. They were doing those low-level appointment setting, tactical I hate to say boring, but a lot of our sales reps would say, the prospecting stuff wasn't their favorite thing to do, and they were also doing the exciting closing things as well as managing our partner base. So once the market got a little bit more competitive, we realized we needed to put more focus on that lead generation part and maybe split up those duties in a more mixed up sales team.
Heather and Jim... Go ahead, Jim. I was just going to say one of the things that I skipped over. Why don't you give our listeners just a brief overview of what M5 does so they can associate what your sales team is going through?
Yeah. At M5, we sell specialized business voice over IP phone systems. And this is a very specialized phone system for business that has the essentially no PBX. We actually do everything via software and host the system in the cloud. So companies can add multiple locations. They can add users. They can detract users from their systems anywhere without having to worry about managing a PBX system. So we manage all of that. All we have to have is a specialized internet connection, and we can bring that phone system up.
Okay, excellent. And so, Heather, kind of back to what you were saying, selling those kinds of solutions in a very, very competitive market, prospecting is never the favorite thing of a salesperson to do. So there was this great need to produce more leads for sales and also to produce higher quality leads. And then where did you guys go from there?
Well, great. One of the pieces on this is We realized early on, if you look at some of the national statistics from like Serious Decisions or some of those players, what you find out is that when you're doing lead generation programs, to set that very first appointment, it takes on average about 22 phone calls to set that first appointment. On a national average, the average sales guy will bail out at about four to six calls. They're done. You know, if they haven't gotten a call back from a customer, they just kind of give up and move on. And so what we realized early on is that we were going to need something different. We were going to need somebody that could be tenacious enough to go through that 22 calls every single time, get that appointment set, and then once we did that, we could put one of our rock stars on that, and they could go ahead and close it. So it wasn't just about solving the top of the funnel and the lead generation piece, it was about the conversion piece. And so some of our statistics on this is our sales team converts, we call them IDs, which is a first appointment. And, you know, that ID or lead, we have a 17% conversion rate on that. So basically for every five leads we give to a salesperson, they convert that into one system sale.
Right. So what we did specifically was put together an inside sales team. So our marketing program sort of emptied our leads into an inside sales team. Their goal is only to set an appointment, to make sure the customer is qualified, they might be a fit for our system, and they set an appointment for the outside sales rep to go out and talk with the customer and get that thing closed. So once we did that, once we took the prospecting burden off the outside reps and created our own team, we saw, for instance, we were using one lead vendor. We spent lots of money over the last few years buying leads from them and did not convert one of those leads into a sale. Once we added the inside sales team, that program is now responsible for about 10% of our revenue today.
And I love this organization and the way you guys have streamlined this. I mean, one of the things that comes out of CSO Insights and their annual study on sales every year is how sales really is asking marketing to go deeper and deeper into their funnel. And this is a great example of that. Instead of just throwing everything over to sales in the early prospecting stage, you guys have done two things. Number one, you've added very smart lead nurturing programs, and we'll talk about those in a minute. And number two, you've actually added an inside sales, which is an additional qualifying layer. So again, sales can do what they do best, which is selling. And I do find that in very, very highly effective revenue generating, demand generation teams, and not a lot of cases, but I do find this to be quite a successful model. And Heather, how long have you guys had this this inside sales team in place, and who does this team report to? Does it report into sales or does it report into marketing?
Right. So the inside sales team has been in place probably, we started it last November. They really didn't get up and running for a month or so, getting those guys trained and making a good amount of calls. That team reports to me, and I happen to be the head of marketing here at M5. If someone asked me if I would suggest that's the right way to do it, I'm not sure. I happen to come from the sales side, so I have quite a bit of experience in managing salespeople, and I think that's what helps me manage that inside sales team well. So I'm not sure that I would recommend this structure depending on the personnel you have, but in our case, the inside sales team reports to me, and I'm the head of marketing.
And Debbie, one of the things that we do with this is that we have blurred the line between sales and marketing in our organization. Since I oversee both groups, there is no throw the lead over the wall. Basically, sales and marketing work in concert. And you know, where we've seen marketing programs fail is where, you know, marketing is this own separate entity, and it's doing its own thing, and you know, they're throwing leads over to the sales guy, and they say, this is a lead. And to the sales guy, a lead is a 3x5 card with a name, address, and a check stapled to it. And if it doesn't have the check, it's not a lead, right? In our world, we've blurred the line between sales and marketing and made both pieces work in concert in a total symbiosis.
And again, I see this as the hallmark when I take a look at the most successful demand generation teams, and those are marketing teams that are make a measurable impact on revenue, that kind of teamwork is absolutely positively fundamental. So let me ask you one more question about the structure, and then I want to go into talking about the how many lead nurturing programs are you guys running right now? 16?
Mm-hmm.
You guys can't believe somebody's actually running 16 lead nurturing programs. We'll talk about that in just a minute. So, Heather, you had given me a statistic that as a result of putting this additional qualifying layer in place and having these people work early in that top funnel after the lead has passed from marketing, what other kind of metrics do you have that report success from that structure?
Sure. So we look at our leads in four different ways. We have, or four different types of leads, I should say. We have leads that come from our partner base. We have leads that come from companies that we buy them from. We have leads that are generated by the sales team through our clients and through other contact referrals. And the last batch of leads are from our website. So what we've been able to do is know what the conversion rates are for each of those buckets. So the two that marketing really controls are the web-generated and the ones we pay for. We know that we can convert web leads at a rate of about 12.5%, and the leads that we buy, we're converting at about 6%. So this allows, knowing those numbers so well, allows me to know what I can pay for a lead for it to still be profitable once I turn it over to closed.
And Heather, your definition of conversion in this instance is?
Conversion means an appointment to a closed deal.
Wow. Okay. Excellent.
Yeah, the important word there is revenue.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, excellent. And again, I think you guys, again, are just a great example of being obsessed with the numbers and, again, being able to knit everything together so you can show absolutely with certainty the impact that marketing is absolutely making on revenue, okay? Well, let's talk about your lead nurturing programs. So you guys implemented marketing automation when?
March of this year, we actually replaced, we did a rip and replace. We had a an earlier version of a software product that we were trying to do the lead nurturing for, and we ended up taking that system out. We ended up installing Eloqua, and we sound like a commercial for those guys, but they've done a phenomenal job for us. And with the Eloqua system, we were able to start taking the balance of the leads that weren't in the 17% conversion and start tracking those leads and continuing to market to those. We broke all the leads that don't close into buckets, and, you know, so that we can run basically nurture campaigns on those. And then we also took some of the inbound leads and broke those into buckets. And then if we had any lost sales, we also market to those as well, because sometimes in our industry, we may have lost a deal, but then the other company that sold the deal may botch the install really, really bad, and we end up being able to recover that lead.
So let me just dissect what you just said, because what you just said was a best practices approach to help you begin to ascertain how and what lead nurturing programs that you need to look at creating in your company. So the first thing you said was dropouts. So of the leads that marketing controls, 17% convert to a closed piece of business, which means that 83% do not. And they're dropping out at all different places along the process. I call that the leaky lead faucet, right? Mm-hmm. So one of the first things that you guys did, Jim, is that you took a look at the lead flow and you identified where leads were leaking out and then identified a nurturing program that might be targeted to that particular leak in the system?
Yeah, we have two big leaks, I guess, to use your terminology. We have leads that never turn into opportunities, and generally our inside sales team can capture the reason for that. So they actually either get in touch with the lead or don't, or they get in touch with the lead and find out why it's not going to be an opportunity. Once we convert it to an opportunity, and we don't close it to business, we call it closed lost, and we generally have a reason why that business wasn't won. Because they decided to do nothing or they chose one of our competitors, et cetera.
So tell me about those lead nurturing programs. So, for example, if someone doesn't turn into an opportunity, tell me about what that lead nurturing program looks like, Heather.
Sure. So if someone doesn't turn into an opportunity because we were never able to contact them, we put them in a general nurture campaign that Brands M5 sends out offers. You may get an offer, hey, talk to us. Right now we're running something that says talk to us and for 15 minutes and agree to a business impact report and you'll get a free flip camera. So that one would go out to someone who hasn't talked to us in the past that may just some getting a gift may wake them up and cause them to pick up the phone or fill out a form.
On these no opportunities, and when you put them, how many do you have you programmed all these sends? I mean, how often are you sending them something in this nurturing program?
It's generally every 3 to 4 weeks, not more than that, because then
okay.
It just becomes white noise.
Okay. All right. So about every 3 to 4 weeks. And how do they get placed? I mean, if clearly it's the inside sales people at this point who is saying it's no opportunity. Or it could be direct sales, field sales, also saying it's not going to become an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
So how do they get placed into the nurturing program that you've set up?
That's a great question. So we use a CRM system. The inside sales team or outside sales team will tag that as no contact, and we draw that list into our Eloqua system. We have an unbelievable talent running our campaign. Our campaign manager, Kendra Scott Webb, and she pulls those lists, plugs them into our Eloqua database, and we run off of that.
Okay. So is that something that happens dynamically, or do you go pull the list and plop them into the lead nurturing program, or does that happen dynamically?
In some cases, it happens dynamically. In case sometimes we need to do a little bit of scrubbing because we don't have the exact information we need from the sales team.
Okay, all right. So you have one major campaign going, or you probably have multiple campaigns depending upon what the reason for no opportunity was running there. Would that be right?
That's right. So if we did get in touch with them and we didn't convert it because it was too small, we may wait a little bit longer, or we may actually take them off because they're never going to be a fit for our services. If it didn't convert because they just bought an on-premise phone system, we know that it's going to be 3 years before we can be of value to them again, so that would be a separate campaign. If they went with another hosted system, in that case, we have a small window during their hosted implementation where things tend not to go so well to steal them back, and then generally a year later, they might be out and looking again.
So, Jim, would it be fair to say that having a really good integration with CRM is part of the success for this, so that as salespeople or inside sales gets these leads, there is something that they can do in their CRM, so then marketing knows how to put people back into these nurturing programs and which nurturing program?
Absolutely, Debbie. In fact, we probably didn't cover on how sophisticated we are with the technology that we utilize. In the case of M5, we utilize Salesforce.com, which is integrated directly into our Eloqua system, and our salespeople live in the Salesforce.com piece, and we gather all sorts of different metrics. And one of the things that we've done that's different is we've actually taken, since our phone system is really software that's working in the cloud, we've basically connected the M5 phone cloud with the Salesforce.com cloud, and what happens is whenever our people pick up the phone and dial a customer, that call is recorded directly into Salesforce, the time, the duration. We get dashboards and metrics every single day that's pushed to the sales managers so that they can see how many calls their guys have been making, how many appointments they've touched, how many customers they've called, and it works both inbound and outbound. So we're very, very sophisticated that way. And so by utilizing the CRM component of this with our sales force, we get incredible statistics in there, and those statistics are available for marketing to be able to push these programs out in the Eloqua system.
I think that is absolutely amazing. Again, just another great example of all these Web 2.0 technologies and how you can innovate and knit those things together to make a real impact on what marketing's doing and also on what sales is doing. And again, I've visited your location in New York City. And, again, a very, very highly motivated team. And the fact that you guys have got Salesforce integrated with M5 and everything becomes part of a record and then everything integrates with Eloqua, I mean that's just a fabulous technology trio right there. Okay.
Debbie, one of the things I'd like to share with the audience, too, that I think is very germane to this. Right now, there might be a lot of listeners out there thinking, oh, my gosh, I can't afford to buy some of these systems. And what ended up happening for us, just to give some raw line statistics here, last year, before we had all of these pieces implemented, in April of 2008, we had a banner month, and it was kind of one of the high watermark pieces for us. And we had 25 sales reps producing that revenue. In June of 2009, in the economy that we're in today, we actually beat the April 2008 high watermark with 8 sales reps because of leveraging all this marketing technology. We were able to take eight highly trained sales reps, and they actually outproduced 25 of our old sales reps using this leverage of marketing.
That's amazing. I mean, that is absolutely amazing. And again, the whole purpose behind marketing automation is not to, you know, let people go. But it does give you a very vivid example, and these are completely documented metrics that Jim has at M5 to the power of these systems. And so you're right, Jim. Quite often people are taking a look at the investments, and if they're moving to like a Salesforce.com or they're taking a look at a marketing automation and they're trying to justify the spend, again, this is just one area where that spend, I mean, in a lot of companies, the ROI is completely fabulous when it comes to marketing automation. Again, like anything else, when it's absolutely positively used the right way. So I think that's a great metric. Heather, let me ask you about the next bucket of lead nurturing programs that you guys do, and that is when something becomes an opportunity, but it does not close. Tell us what those lead nurturing programs look like.
So there's a few different programs based on that. Some of them are similar to the leads that we don't convert if we have a reason. Right now, we just put a campaign into play that is nurturing all the opportunities we lost 12 months ago. And 12 months is a key time frame for us because that is when a lot the contract period of a lot of our competitors. So we know their contract is up and they're going to start thinking about making a move. So that's one that's been pretty exciting for us.
What does that campaign look like specifically? What are you guys doing?
Basically, we're sending some interesting offers. So one of them, if we know that they went with a competitor that uses some of the phone hardware that may be similar to ours, we can offer a substantial discount on the implementation because it's the same phones. And so we hype the fact that they don't have to spend any more money on hardware. If it's someone that we lost to an on-premise system, we may offer to take back that system and buy it from them. So that makes it a little bit more interesting to consider a change.
So like the some examples that we sent out in our Salesforce actually made recommendations of deals that they had lost that they wanted, you know, revived and wanted marketing to go after. On the premise-based systems, we sent out a cash for clunkers campaign. We kind of did a little spin off the government piece, and we, you know, we did trade in that PBX, and we would, you know, we would give you a certain amount of money for to take back this PBX. In other cases where we had some people that had bought some different brand phones, you know, we run on Cisco phones, and yeah, they may have purchased some other brand. Heather's team did a promo for free phones where we would give you free Cisco phones. And in that program, it was a very focused group. We had a tremendous response from that. And almost, I believe, was it 73% of our revenue for the one month that we ran the campaign came from the free phone piece because it was so laser focused on that segmented population.
Yeah, and you really learn things about your market when you when you have the ability to try a lot of different things, Debbie. So that's an amazing, you know, thing we learned, that when we take some of the upfront cost off our product, we get a much better response. And that's something we really wouldn't have understood if we didn't have the ability to market like this with the tools we have.
So let's talk about that for a minute, because I think that's a great statement. Because quite often, I counsel marketers, you've got to play, you've got to try, you have to experiment. Mm-hmm. So how much experimentation did you guys do as you were working with these and building your lead nurturing repertoire?
Quite a bit. I think in the beginning, when the first couple you try, you learn what mistakes you can make, and mm-hmm. then they get better and better. A good example of experimenting. We're a company that uses Net Promoter Score to understand how happy our customers are, and we have a subset of customers, a big subset, that gave us a 9 or 10 on a survey and would be really happy to refer us. They've told us. Yet we think we should be getting more referrals from them. So using the automation tool, we launched 3 separate campaigns to that base to see which one they would respond to best. And then once we had the results in, we hit the other 2/3 of the base with the one that worked the best. So that was something, and it wasn't difficult. It was something that was pretty easy to do, and we got very good data from. Getting referrals from our client base is going to be a really easy way to close business. So this tool helped us find the best way to do that.
And Debbie, to give you some statistics or metrics around that, let's just use the internal customer base that we were marketing to for some extra pieces and for the NPS score. What we found out was that the first program that we launched, we tried to do an email campaign, and we had about a 1.5% response rate on that. So we changed up the campaign. We started doing it in Eloqua, and the results jumped up to about an 8% response rate on that. And so, you know, we kept tweaking the plan and, you know, finding better ways to reach out, everything from the design of the landing pages to just how much information we requested, you know, for them to opt into the program. And when we did that, we've now been able to tune that information and our customer letter and everything to where right now we're running about a 36% to 38% response rate when we shoot out one of those campaigns to our install base. So that's a huge improvement simply by trying a bunch of different things, you know, just in that one little segment.
And let me just remind everybody that you guys have been working as a team in this particular company, bringing in, I mean, this has really just all been since March of this year.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. That's simply amazing to me, absolutely positively amazing. Heather, let me go back to, you said you did 3 separate campaigns to test on Net Promoter Score, and you selected the one. What were the things that you were testing there?
Yeah, so that's like the secret sauce, right? So what we found is that people respond better to a personal contact than just a blasted offer. So with respect to our customers who love us the best, they really want to hear from the people that they work with M5, whether that's their sales rep or their account service manager. So the emails that we can make that look like they come from someone personally do much better than just the blasted offers. And we offered some really amazing things. We offered $500 to their favorite charity. We offered a significant amount off their current bill. And none of those things really made much of a difference until we gave it a personal touch, and that's something a good marketing automation tool will help you do.
That's amazing. So let's talk about that personal touch for a minute in the nurturing programs that you do. So you have about 16 lead nurturing programs that you do. Do those all come from marketing, or do they sometimes come, quote unquote, from sales? How do you address making those more personal?
Yeah, so sometimes they come from marketing. If it's someone who hasn't had a lot of contact from us, they come from marketing or from a character we've created to make it seem a little bit more personal. But people that have worked for us before, we try really hard to get those emails to come from the sales rep or their account manager personally, so that they're more likely to open the email and be invested in reading it if they know the person that it's from.
Okay, excellent. And I do, you're right, we do see response rate improve the more you can personalize it. And having it come from somebody you already have a relationship with makes a huge difference in the open rates. So let's go back to the lead nurturing program. So I want to find out more about how you guys envisioned and created 16 lead nurturing programs. Did you kind of, as a marketing team, go off in a room all by yourself and say, yeah, we're going to come up with these programs? Or did you involve sales? And if you involved sales, how and where did you involve them for their feedback?
The big thing we did first was start to figure out where we were actually needing the campaign. So that we broke the bucket down into, there was demand generation where we were, you know, trying to push something out, and then there was also the second big bucket, which is really the follow-up of what happens if we didn't get the result we wanted. So we kind of broke the programs into those two buckets. One was kind of a push, one was kind of a pull. And from there, then it just became a matter of literally stratifying what was going on. We did, for example, for our particular industry, moving is a huge event, right? So whenever a client goes to move locations, the phone system becomes obviously a high priority. So what we did is we ended up building an entire nurture program on companies that were either getting ready to move or were in the process of moving, or were in the process of opening another location. And so we found a lead source that could actually give us that, you know, that look and that vision to see when a company's lease was coming up. And so that's what drove all the pieces of that nurture campaign. And so we did that with each of the areas, for example, hedge funds and attorneys and multiple location deals, things like that. So that's how we stratified the different lead campaigns. So we looked at what was it we really needed, and then we said, would a lead generation campaign, a nurture campaign, fit this? And if it did, that's how we designed them. So it was kind of an iterative process. We didn't really just sit down and say, hey, we'll just design 16. It just kind of, you know, you build the first one, and that's really probably the hardest challenge you face, is when you stare at that blank sheet of paper and have to overcome the tyranny of the blank page. But then you know each one of these kind of comes, you know, from its own necessity.
If I could just add real quick to that, you asked about where that comes from. It absolutely comes from sales. So we have a very sales-focused marketing team. Many of the people on our marketing team were on the sales side for a while. Our marketing team sits in on every sales meeting, gets trained along with the salespeople. We think it's really important that the marketing people understand the sales process, because anything that gets created has to stand up in that sales world. So we're very focused on making sure our sales needs are being met by our marketing team by forcing them to work very closely together.
And again, the greatest success in demand generation marketing I've seen comes from very close collaboration, exactly the kind of collaboration that you guys are clearly sharing with us. So if I could just kind of bring it back up to a high level, So one of the things that you did, you when you started putting together your lead nurturing programs, you said, where are the leads leaking out? Because we're converting 17%, which means 83% we're not. So let's go on and do some lead nurturing programs. You've looked to current clients on a referral program, which I think is incredibly innovative, and what a fabulous idea, especially in this economy right now. Those customers who are most loyal to you, and most companies have a base of loyal customers. You know, setting them up to do some kind of nurturing for referral, that's, again, a fabulous idea. And then the other thing was really taking a look at key initiatives within your prospect environment. So really understanding their business, when, why, and how they need your solution, and then putting some campaigns around that. So I've kind of got three categories of different kinds of lead nurturing campaigns that you guys have done. Were there other categories as well?
I think the one that we're really starting to dig into now, we get quite a bit of business from our partner base, and they've given us many leads over the years that are just sort of sitting stale in our CRM system. So what we've decided to do is start to nurture those. We have the name of the partner that recommended them to us, so we can use that in the content and just to try to get those up and started again. We find that those partner leads, when they're good, they convert at the highest rate. They're our best lead source, so there's no reason to think that with a little bit of nurturing that we can't turn those leads around as well.
Excellent. Well, we have about 15 minutes left, and I want to ask Heather and Jim one or two last questions. And the other thing I wanted to highlight is that we have a lot of folks who have dialed in to listen to the program, which means that my switchboard is all lit up right now. And what I'd like to do is I would like for callers to be able to call in so they could ask questions of Heather and Jim. And Blog Talk Radio, the way you experience it, is it's a streaming live radio show over the Internet. So if some of you folks who have dialed in to listen will hang up, click on the link that we sent to you in email, or go to Blog Talk Radio and search on No Lead Left Behind, then you can hear this broadcast streaming live over the Internet, and then that will free up the switchboard so that we can ask, so people can call in and ask questions. And I know that we have five or six questions already from the chat room. And so, Majda, if I could go ahead and have you dial in at 646-478-5604. I've got, and Majda's running our chat room, and she can feed us the questions from the chat room. So Majda is 646-478-5604. I've got one slot left on the switchboard because folks have called in. And then we'll take those questions either if you dial in. Again, I've got one slot left. And then we can take those questions. But here's the last question that I have for – I have like 1,000 more questions for Jim and Heather because, again, their story is simply amazing, and I love the metrics. But let's start with Heather, and then I'll go to Jim. Heather, what piece of advice would you give to the marketer that's just beginning this demand generation journey?
I think the biggest piece thing that we've learned is not to be afraid to try different things. A lot of times I find things get slowed down when you overthink them too much. When I have to make this campaign exactly right before we send it. You want to make sure your campaigns are professional, but you're going to try a lot of different things. So make sure that you are executing what you're planning, and then even more important is to track the results, because not only will that help make your future campaigns more successful, when you do find success, you can take those numbers to finance and say, I know exactly how many of these converted, I know exactly how much it costs, and this is why you should give me more money.
Excellent. And metrics, and again, what you measure today is probably not going to be the same thing you measure tomorrow, but you have to start someplace. So I think that's great advice. And Jim, what would your advice be?
I think it's along the same lines. It's try things. Don't worry about making it perfect. Worry about getting it out there, testing it, And, you know, you kind of temper these things by fire. You get it out there. If a program fails, understand why it failed quickly and change it up and figure out what wasn't working and get it to work. And then along Heather's point, too, we track every single metric, everything from, you know, cost per dollar of MRR book versus the campaigns and all that. And through this relentless tracking, you know, at first it'll drive you crazy, but in the end it'll give you such a view to be able to steer your marketing with that you'll be able to get a lot more money from management and from the board, and that's what's really happened for us. Once we could prove that we had a repeatable process, a measurable process, then the board and the executive management team, you know, gathered around us and said, "Go spend more. You know,
excellent.
Go make this happen."
Completely. Again, you guys are a dream come true when it comes to demand generation. So, if you would like to dial in and ask Jim and Heather a question, the guest call-in number is 646-478-5604. And while you're dialing in, and unfortunately I only have one more place left on the switchboard because we have a lot of callers who have called in to listen versus using Blog Talk Radio streaming, so I will take any calls that I can get through. But Majda from the chat room, are you on?
Yeah, hi.
Do you have some questions from the folks in the chat room, Majda?
Yes, I do. Scott has the question, what criteria do you use for qualification to trigger the handoff to field sales?
That's a great question. So our inside sales team is trained with 10 or 11 questions that they have to ask that are apropos to our business to make sure that the lead is qualified. It's so important to get that right because once you hand over a couple of leads to the outside sales team that aren't well qualified, they start to lose hope in their inside sales team and they don't work those leads as hard. So my inside sales team sits among my sales team. They're right in the pit there so that they have a brotherhood or sisterhood, and they have 10 questions that they ask that ensure that the leads they flip over are a good fit. The size of the company, their current situation with their telephone system are just two of the questions that we need to know are a good fit before those get flipped over to the field sales team.
Okay. Majda, another question?
Yeah, I think we have Eric who asked, are there multiple assets in the nurturing program? So do they send one offer or two offers, et cetera?
Yeah, it's definitely more than one offer. When we've sent out offers that we've gotten zero reply on, so you know you got to go at it with something totally different after that. So another way to do it is to get your bucket that, and then split it and do two separate offers to see which one works better, and then hit the other half with the one that works better immediately afterwards.
Again,
one of the things we found too is that when we're doing this, sometimes it's not just one program that works. Sometimes it's the combination. It's almost like a boxer, right? You never just go out there and throw one punch and hope the other guy goes down. It's kind of a multiple approach, and we've seen where we've done a crystal ball campaign followed up by the trade in your clunker, followed up by the free phones, and all of a sudden it was the free phones one after the third hit, so to speak, that they finally responded and did something. So it's that combination piece.
That's, again, excellent. And another great example of why you have to experiment. You can't, I call it the ivory tower. We can't sit in our ivory tower and pretend like we're going to know what kind of response we're going to get. Always set testing up. That's a great piece of advice. Majda, another question? And again, if anyone wants to dial in, I've got one slot open on the switchboard, I believe. It's 646-478-5604. But Majda, do you have another question from the chat room?
Yeah. Eric asks, do you have emails that are personalized, that come through looking like a typical text email, or are they HTML heavy with photos?
We do both. So we have HTML with photos that get a pretty good response, but we also have a a plugin from Eloqua called Elmo that helps our sales team send personal emails that get tracked the same way our Eloqua emails do. So they look like regular emails, but we can send them en masse and track them so that we can get the data for the campaigns the same way. Different things work for different campaigns. If you're going to your regular customer base, sometimes the personal-looking plain email works better than the flashy pictures.
Okay,
and another tip on that too is make sure that if you do an HTML landing page, test it in multiple browsers to make sure that it works in Firefox or Microsoft, any of the others, so that you're getting the effect that you want when it hits the other end.
And there's no perfect tool for that. Jim's absolutely right. You just have to test it. And so one of the things that we see a lot of clients do is that whenever they do create a landing page, they've got a testing team that actually tests in different browsers. I mean, that's just the simplest, most effective way to do that. Okay. Again, if any caller would like to dial in at 646-478-5604, we've got time for like one or two more questions. Master, was there anything else from the chat room?
Yeah, I actually had a question. 16 programs. How do you manage so many?
Hey, do you guys have like a really large marketing team, Jim?
No, we don't. And we actually use a couple specialized tools. So one of the ways that we design what's going to happen in marketing, both Heather and I use a tool called Mind Map, which allows us to kind of put together this. It's almost like a gigantic spider web of programs and which programs link to what program. And then the way that we communicate with our marketing staff, we actually have an inside technical person that does the HTML pages and manages the website. We have one outbound marketeer who writes some of the content, and then we have a professional writer on staff that does some of the campaign stuff. So that's really, and then there's Heather and I, and then that's really our marketing staff, and then three inside salespeople. And one of the ways that we keep everybody on the same page, we use a product called Expresso, which allows us to basically put all of our stuff into an Excel spreadsheet, but we host this Excel spreadsheet up on the web, and our entire team always sees all the programs, the due dates, when things are going to change out. Everybody's connected again in the cloud to be able to see this. So I just think that the Web 2.0 programs today just really help increase your efficiency out there. And we utilize all of those materials to make sure that our team, though small yet mighty, right?
Yeah, and I think that just to add real quickly is that we have very talented people who have compensation plans that are based on our success, like salespeople. So I think that really motivates our team to stay organized. Again, they were born talented as well, so we're very lucky to have them.
Heather, so your marketing team is comped on revenue, is comped on opportunities, is comped on what?
Different positions are comped different ways, but in general, it's on the amount of appointments we can get set for our outside sales team.
That's excellent. Hey, Jim, I have a final question for you, and then I need to close out the program. You know, quite often, a magic metric for a marketing team is what percent of the funnel or what percent of revenue is marketing contribution? How would you answer that question if a board member asked you that at M5?
We actually display that metric in our board presentations at every meeting. We actually show where the leads came from, what percent of those leads closed, and what percent of the revenue was done. And last month we got beat up a little bit, but I think we were at about 32%. It's been as high as 78%.
And you're doing that monthly? That's a monthly?
Correct, monthly.
Okay.
Yeah, and so how we 70% of our revenue a year ago, Debbie, was coming from our partner base, 30% from our internal efforts. For a while, we flipped that down, and I think right now we're about 50-50, so it's really made an unbelievable difference.
Well, there's our warning. And so, again, I think at the end of the day, when you're taking a look at demand generation and you're taking a look at the success of campaigns and the success of lead nurturing, two things come to mind. Number one, Jim and Heather can track 32 to 78% every month is the distinct contribution from marketing, and also the fact that they had two-thirds less rep, and they produced more revenue because of these marketing automation systems. So, again, Jim, Heather, thank you. You guys were absolutely amazing in every single way. If anyone would like to hear this rebroadcast or download it in iTunes, register for the program. You can register through a link we've provided or go to our website, www.pedowitzgroup.com. Again, Jim, Heather, thank you so much, and I look forward to talking to you guys again real soon. Everybody have a great day.
Thanks,
Debbie.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.